Hidden within the study of meteorites, there have been a number of strange, sometimes even bizarre, stories of the recovery and the composition of rocks falling from space. Already mysterious, these fragments of planets and asteroids are sometimes accompanied by colorful and interesting stories beyond their extraterrestrial origins. So here are 10 weird meteorite stories from the history of meteoritics. Number 10. Clarendon Sea, Texas, 2015. While this meteorite isn't of great interest scientifically, it's a common chondrite that represents around 80% of all meteorites we have, and more fall each year, it's the strange circumstances of how this meteorite was found that was interesting, because it apparently was not found by a human. To explain a few things, the sea in the name indicates that it was the third meteorite, unrelated to the others, found in the areas around Clarendon. This was a large weathered meteorite that had broken into fragments, but the largest was about 760 pounds. It was found by the owners of a dude ranch, or rather, was found by their horse, Samson. What happened was they were taking some guests horseback riding and decided to stop for water for the horses near stream. And about 10 feet from the meteorite, Samson stopped in its tracks, snorted at it in an agitated way, and wouldn't get close to it. The owner saw that the huge rock that was scaring the horse was rusty-looking stone, and the other fragments lying around it were significantly heavier than normal rocks, and as a result suspected it was a meteorite. It was confirmed, and indeed this meteorite was discovered by a horse. What exactly the horse was picking up on is anyone's guess, because the meteorite had been sitting on Earth exposed to rain and weather for many years. But whatever it was, the horse knew something wasn't right about that rock. The huge mass is now in a university museum. Number 9. Chinguetti, Mauritania, 1916. The Missing Meteorite Enigma. In 1916, a French army captain named Gaston Repaire overheard some camel herders in Mauritania talking about an enormous block of iron in the Sahara Desert dunes that they referred to as the Iron of God. Repaire asked them if they would show it to him, so they rode out into the desert, even to the extent that one interpretation is that Repaire was blindfolded for the journey because he said he went out there blind. And about dawn they arrived, and there was a truly enormous, partly buried piece of what appeared to be iron, and by enormous the report is that it was 100 meters wide, some more of a hill than a rock, that had polished a mirror shine by the blowing sand. He also noticed that the mass had what he described as needles of iron that could not be broken off, which is interesting because iron-rich silicate meteorites might do that as they weather, and there was no way that Repaire knew that possibility because that type of weathering in this meteorite class had not been discovered yet in 1916. So Repaire collected what he thought was a detached piece of this iron mass from the top of it that he believed was part of it. And after World War I had ended, he had it analyzed, and it was found to be a scarce type of stony iron meteorite called a mesosiderite, exactly the type of meteorite that might form the needles he observed. This type of meteorite is from a zone inside of an asteroid where an impact of a stone mass hits an iron mass, heating everything up, and the materials mixed only to cool afterward. After that, a further impact knocked it off the asteroid to eventually make its way to Earth. If a meteorite like this falls on Earth and is subject to long periods of weathering, the silicates can weather out before the iron and form metal needle structures. Because of the purported size, which would be far larger than any other known meteorite, the huge mass out in the desert became the stuff of legends to meteorite hunters. Any attempts for many years to find the iron main mass again were fruitless, and it was assumed that the shifting sand had reburied the mass. Compounded by the fact that Repaire only had a general idea, more of a guess, of where it was because he was traveling blind. No one today living in the area seems to have any knowledge of the original story of the cattle herdsman that blindfolded Repaire to keep the Iron of God's location secret. The scientific problem here is that there is an upper limit on how large a relatively small meteorite that fell to Earth can be. Even in a glancing skip trajectory, and not explode into huge numbers of fragments because of violent entry. The description of the iron block here far exceeds that size, but also wasn't large enough to overwhelm it, like something like the dinosaur killer asteroid can. and the meteorite material he brought back didn't have any out-of-the-ordinary strength properties or anything like that. It's still unknown what Repair saw in the desert. We only know that he brought back a real meteorite from the area that is of a scarce type. But modern magnetometer surveys of the area simply do not show a giant mass of iron-rich material present anywhere out there, and the Chinguetti meteorite itself that he recovered is determined to only have been no larger than 31 inches originally before its atmospheric flight. Repair was schooled in natural sciences and geology and maintained that he knew what he saw, but whatever that huge mass was, it was never found again. Number 8. Anne Hodges survived being hit by a meteorite. This case is one of the very rare cases where someone was verifiably hit by a meteorite. The story is about Anne Elizabeth Fowler Hodges. On November 30, 1954, she was napping on her couch in Sylacauga, Alabama, when a meteorite fell through her roof, through the ceiling, hit a radio and bounced off, and then hit her on the thigh and hand, leaving bruises. Initially, her and her mother, who was also in the house at the time, thought the chimney had collapsed because the meteorite had filled the house with debris and dust and left a large hole in the roof and ceiling. Her husband got home a few hours later from work, to which she said there had been a little excitement. It did shake her, though, and she visited the hospital the next day. And here's where this gets a bit silly. So the U.S. Air Force shows up and confiscates the meteorite. Not at all sure how they had that legal authority or why they were interested in a natural space rock, and confirmed that it was indeed a chondrite meteorite, and somehow the mayor of the town got a hold of it and wanted to donate it to a museum. But Hodges countered that she had well enough evidence from the hole in her house that it was hers. She eventually got her meteorite back, only to get sued by her landlord who claimed ownership. A settlement was agreed upon, and Hodges ultimately kept her meteorite. The problem is that she got a lot of short-term media attention over the incident, and the fact that it happened at all seemed to have affected her health overall, which wasn't great to begin with. And ultimately, she sold the meteorite to the Alabama Museum of Natural History. Number 7. Space in Northern Sudan, 2008. This is a situation that will probably happen again, and with increasing frequency as all sky surveys come online to actively track near-Earth objects with increasing precision. On October 8, 2008, the automated Catalina Sky Survey spotted an asteroid, cataloged as 2008 TC3, that appeared to be on a collision course with Earth. It was, but posed no major threat. It was simply too small. But what's noteworthy is that it was first spotted in space, and then was monitored all the way back down to the surface of the Earth. One day later, it hit Earth as a meteorite, and was predicted correctly to fall in an area of northern Sudan. The entry was witnessed by airline pilots as flashes in the sky, who had been warned of the imminent fall, and it exploded 37 kilometers above the ground with a yield of as much as 2.1 kilotons of TNT. Much of this meteorite vaporized in the atmosphere, but about 35 pounds of fresh meteorites were ultimately found near an area called Almahata Sita, Arabic for Station 6, which is a railroad stop on the line to Khartoum. The meteorite is generally, and it gets complicated, considered to be a rare type called a urelite, based on the first sample found, and was found to contain amino acids, making it an important meteorite. That's usually something associated with a different type of meteorite, and is associated with life. But the story gets more convoluted. The origin of urelites is undetermined, but it is believed they are from F-type solar system asteroids. Then it got weirder. As the area of the fall was searched, more meteorites were found, and they kept coming back as different classifications of meteorite, sometimes radically. Indeed, there were about 20 different types noted, some unique, that were all in a very small geographical area. It seems unlikely that they aren't somehow related, but it's not impossible that a bunch of different types of meteorites from different origins would fall about the same time in the same area. It could happen, but not likely. But the types didn't really match the dust in the atmosphere after the fall and other indicators that maybe this is just an area that happened by chance to get hit by a bunch of different meteorites from different origins. Nanodiamonds were actually found in some of the material that would indicate that the meteorite actually came from a moon or Mars-sized object originally that was shattered into asteroids, or at least a Ceres-sized object that had interaction of water going on. Interestingly, this object was also captured by infrasound detector arrays in Kenya when it exploded, and the U.S. caught it with its spy satellites, the images of which have never been released. Ultimately, though, asteroids of this size hit Earth several times per year, and it fell over a sparsely populated area and caused no damage. Number 6. The Malacca Incident. In the middle of the 17th century, or the 19th century, the history isn't clear on that, a Dutch ship called the Malacca was sailing near the island of Sumatra, and the account is that a meteorite struck the ship, devastating its deck and killed two sailors instantly and injured many more. The account suggests that the meteorite fragments actually penetrated the wood deck of the vessel. The problem is that no one seems to have saved any of the fragments. Finding anything now is not likely, as the fragments would be underwater, in an uncertain location because it happened in the open sea. The ship itself is long gone, the witnesses long gone, and no meteorite associated with it still exists. Still, the nature of the account does seem to indicate that it was a meteorite that hit the Malacca one day long ago. Number 5. The Tutankhamun Meteorite Dagger. The pharaoh Tutankhamun reigned about 1334 to 1325 BC, and his tomb was found famously intact and unrobbed by Howard Carter. Many famous artifacts were discovered, including perhaps the most famous ancient artifact ever found, the gold mask of Tutankhamun. But also in the grave goods of the tomb, there was an iron dagger. The composition of the iron here showed a high nickel content and the presence of cobalt that indicated a composition consistent with an iron meteorite that had been worked into a knife. This was kingly indeed, because this was a period in time where iron smelting and iron working was very rare in Egypt, and in fact, that early iron was considered more precious than gold. Iron of unknown origin found somewhere in Egypt in a fully metallic form would have certainly gotten attention and ended up in Tutankhamun's burial goods. There have actually been instances of metallic beads found in Egyptian tombs that appear to be meteoritic iron as well, but it's not clear if it's from the same meteorite as the dagger. But analysis of some of the beads showed that the Egyptians were working with meteorite iron before they were working with smelted iron. Oddly, the Egyptians appeared to link iron with the stars in their temple inventories. Regardless of the reasons they did that, well, we link iron today and nickel with the explosions of giant stars. Number 4. The Iron Reign of Yunnan Province, about 1341 AD. This is a truly anomalous one because it should be solved by now but isn't. Historic annals from China record that around 1341, a huge iron rain occurred that was so intense that numerous people and animals were killed. If this actually happened, it would be among the most deadly meteorite falls in recorded history. In medieval China, they had been smelting and working iron for millennia, and knew what iron was. It was an everyday material for them, so they would have recognized iron when they saw it. Moreover, the account specifically describes a massive explosion in the sky before the iron rain, and it can be reasonably said that the most likely cause was an iron meteorite entering the atmosphere, detonating into numerous fragments, and the fragments falling to Earth. This still happens. It can happen tomorrow. And the account seems to accurately describe that. But here is the oddity. For such a large event, the reality is that iron will just sit in the ground and slowly rust. There are meteorites far older than 1341 that survive. The Canyon Diablo meteorite in Arizona is iron, and it fell 50,000 years ago, forming an iron rain of its own, fragments of which are numerous, along with fully metallic fragments still found today. Yet in this case, even in an area where metal detectors have been in private hands for years, no one has ever found any specimens of an iron-rich meteorite fall in this area. The pieces should be there, but haven't turned up. Even if the fragments were recovered and smelted, with that extensive of a fall, something would have been missed. And there are other iron meteorite falls in China that in modern times were easily and rapidly identified, no matter how old the fall was. Number 3. Bondoc and Harvey Nininger. This story is like something out of an Indiana Jones film. This meteorite is an intermediate meteorite type, officially a mesosiderite, a mix of stone and iron in roughly equal proportions, and was found on the Bondoc Peninsula in the Philippines sometime in 1956. A lot of people did not at the time believe this was a meteorite. It's very strange compared to other meteorites known, and still is. But it was one and was sold to Dr. Harvey H. Neininger in 1962. Neininger was basically the father of the field of meteorite studies, and was keenly acquiring any specimens he could from anywhere in the world for his studies. In this case, the Bondoc meteorite was enormous, about 850 kilograms. But getting something like that from a remote area in the Philippines back to his laboratory in the United States was not an easy task at all. Basically, Neininger sent a grad student from the University of Kansas to go get the meteorite, and it took over 3 years in total. He had to walk 9 hours to get to the meteorite with the team he had, along a crocodile and snake-infested river, and once there had to load the meteorite on a sled that was supposed to be drawn by 3 harnessed carabao, a water buffalo, though some sources say caribou, but they couldn't budge it. So they brought in a bulldozer with great difficulty. One wonders, if you intend to drag a sled, why not a team of 4 carabao? Well, the accounts do say that there were crocodiles in the area, so maybe originally they did. Anyway, the bulldozer dragged it to a riverbank. They built a bamboo raft and loaded it onto it, and then a typhoon struck, derailing the whole thing. And 2 motorboats had to be brought in to keep the raft stable during the storm. But one of the boats sank, nearly killing 4 people. Eventually, with even more difficulty, it was transported to Manila by truck, and then loaded onto a ship and taken to the US, where there was much bureaucratic red tape to import it, and finally it made it to Neininger's lab. And the bulk of this meteorite is now with a specialized laboratory at the University of Arizona. Seems like a lot of trouble that grad student John Lednicki went through, but it was worthwhile because Bondoc is a very unique meteorite with unclear origins, other than it is from the boundary layer of a destroyed asteroid between its iron core and silicate surface. Number 2, the Hypatia Stone, Egypt, 1996. In 1996, a small claimed meteorite was found. Some claimed it to be kimberlite debris, but there are also still proponents of it being a meteorite of a very special origin, the nucleus of a comet. This has never been settled, and this stone is still considered unclassified and not listed in the official meteorite catalogs. The reason the finder picked it up was because it appeared glassy, and in that area of Egypt, a valuable type of impact glass is found, known as Libyan desert glass. But it wasn't that. The problem is that this stone was tiny, only 30 grams, and had to be cut into pieces for analysis, and only about 4 grams really remain. Where it gets weird is the composition. This rock contains diamonds, microscopic ones, which meteorites sometimes do, but Earth geology less likely. Though obviously diamonds are found on this planet. The samples showed anomalous isotope distributions that looked extraterrestrial, but were called into question as contamination. One interesting idea here is that it has been suggested that the stone actually is a fragment of whatever impacted North Africa and created the Libyan desert glass. But this too is unresolved. Moreover, the weird chemistry suggests in some ways that if it is a meteorite, it predates the solar system. By 2018, compounds were found that supported a very unusual but extraterrestrial origin. Whatever this rock is, it's chemically weird, and some samples of interstellar dust grains actually overlap with it, meaning that it's possible that this stone is a relic, older than the solar system, of material created in a Type 1A supernova. But ultimately, just what this stone is, or even if it represents a meteorite, and if not, what created its geology on Earth, remain open questions. Number 1. The fossil meteorite Austroplana 065. This one is a genuine mystery with a bizarre history. So meteorites, unless something unusual happens, just land on Earth's surface and then start to weather away. Eventually they're gone, incorporated in the soil. And chances are, because micrometeoroids constantly rain upon the surface of the Earth, you almost certainly have interacted with degraded material from space, if you've ever gardened or even washed your car, or at least the atoms they were made from before they dissipated from weathering and so on. But rarely a meteorite can preserve for a very long time under the right conditions, and even effectively become a fossil. Cue in the Thorsberg Stone Quarry in Sweden. This meteorite impacted Earth in the Ordovician period, about 470 million years ago. It basically fell in water and embedded itself in sediment, and that preserved it. This is an unusual period because other fossil meteorites of this period from the same fossil beds have been found that seem to correlate with a specific breakup of an asteroid that yielded the very common L-type of chondrite. L-chondrites are considered very normal meteorites for the solar system and show nothing unusual, but one is very different. Cataloged as Astroplana 065, this meteorite may have been a fragment of the impactor that broke up the L-chondrite parent body, based on cosmic ray exposure. But it's not like any other meteorite ever seen, because the chromium to oxygen isotope ratios fall way outside of any other meteorite we've ever found. There have been papers published on this anomalous meteorite, one specifically that suggests that whatever this meteorite is, the type no longer falls on Earth for unknown reasons, even though the L-chondrites still routinely do. This is unsatisfying. If you have one type still falling, you should have both types still falling, because to shatter an asteroid of the magnitude of the L-chondrite parent body, you either need huge mass, which leaves meteorites, or very high speed. Or alternatively, you need a situation where the L-chondrite parent body is still out there somewhere, and took other hits, and still produces ejected material, but the impactor is long gone and does not. The ultimate conclusion at the time, though, was that the meteorites that fall on Earth today are not completely representative of what asteroids were in the asteroid belt during the Ordovician period. That makes little sense. I offer another suggestion, that the meteorite impactor may have been small and moving at a high-speed hyperbolic trajectory, and its anomalous isotopes may point to it being an interstellar meteorite that originated in another star system entirely. If you have things like 3i Atlas, Oumuamua, and 2i Borisov in such numbers, as to suggest interstellar material passes through the solar system constantly and always has, then it's certainly possible that such a rock might hit a solar system object at a hyperbolic speed, a characteristic that identifies interstellar objects, and leave a meteorite that gets deposited on Earth. I leave it up to the chemists to decide if my hypothesis is viable or not. Thanks for listening. I'm futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier, currently warning all of you in the audience that if you intend to recover a multiple ton meteorite from a remote location, be sure you bring enough caribou if it's in an area where they live, and not water buffaloes if that isn't appropriate. That whole affair got infinitely more difficult than planned because they were a caribou short. But isn't that how life works? Never enough hours in the day and always a caribou short, which is why it takes me forever to get books out. And be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.